afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I say that every week, and then I realize that I already know that, and you already know that, but I still have to tell you who I am for some reason, because you want to know I'm not Chris Kington Barker. The goal of Central Coast Voices is to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices addresses how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how we will look at the long-range ramifications of change, or some cases, lack of change in our society and what that does. We're going to deal with a serious topic today that people know about and in most cases pay attention to all the time, but sometimes we forget about the way it affects different parts of the Central Coast and different areas of what's happening. We're going to talk about the homeless community and pretty much how the homeless community affects winter and some of the issues that are revolving around that. We're focused today because of looking at weather and the ramifications of weather and homelessness on the North County, because if you haven't noticed, it is generally the coldest part of the Central Coast. At least those of us who live there know that when we look outside and realize that there is frost on our lawn out front, that it becomes a factor. My guests today are Tim Hartness, who's the coordinator of the Atascadero Warming Center, Lisa Frazier, and she is the Central Coast Executive Director for the Central Coast Link and the Center for Family Strengthening, and Jim Patterson, who's president of ECHO. That's the El Camino Homeless Organization in Atascadero. That's the homeless shelter in the North County. And joining us by phone will be Laurel Weir, who's the San Luis Obispo County Homeless Services Coordinator. Laurel, are you with us there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, sorry about that. Thanks for getting the time. I know you're on the road this week, so it was kind of hard to fit this into your schedule, and I appreciate you being part of the discussion. Sorry we didn't get the phones worked out a little sooner, so you missed your introduction. I want to start with you, if we can, because first off, I know you aren't going to be able to be with us for the whole hour. There's this general perception of our population that that homelessness is with us to stay and that we're not doing much to address it, even though we know there's lots of things going on, lots of programs that are being effective. ECHO up in Atascadero has grown tremendously and has got a wonderful facility that they've put together. The groundbreaking on the Prado Road, new Prado Center, happened about a month ago. Where are we in the community when we look at our success or failures, if you will, with addressing homelessness?
Well, I think that to address your first question, and homelessness really is something that it is possible to do something about. And there have been a lot of new initiatives in the county over the past few years that have made a difference. For example, the Department of Social Services got funding from the state to help rehouse homeless families with children who are participants in the CalWORKS program. And since that program began in the fall of 2014, we've housed nearly 200 homeless families. And our 50 Now program that the county has been running with the help of Transitions Mental Health Association, which has taken 50 of the most vulnerable, chronically homeless persons off of the streets and put them into permanent supportive housing, has been very successful. We just did a report to the Board of Supervisors about that a couple months ago in October, and the report is online. If folks are interested in reading it, we track the impact of the program on the use of public health and safety resources among the folks that we were serving, and showed that by putting homeless people into housing, you can make a very significant reduction in the number of days in jail and the number of psychiatric health hospitalizations and all kinds of outcome measures like that. Similarly, there has been a big effort over the past 2 years really to focus on assisting veterans who are homeless. And we have been kind of tracking the veteran numbers, and we are seeing them go down as a result of that. And we're looking forward to the upcoming almost point in time count in January to really get a good handle on how much progress we've made on that front.
On the point in time study that you do, I guess over the last 3 years, we're actually looking at over 25% reduction in homeless as we counted. That seems significant and delightful to hear, but that means that we still have 75% of the people who were homeless 3 or 4 years ago who are homeless. Are our numbers encouraging compared to national numbers, or how do we see it?
Well, in the 2015 count, we had one of the largest decreases of any of the counties in California. So we have been making some progress. We'll be interested. We do this count every 2 years, so our next count is going to be in January, at the end of January, and so we're very interested to see how we fare compared to 2015. But certainly, I can tell you without knowing the count numbers yet that we still have a significant number of people who are still homeless and in need of assistance.
Okay. All righty. I want to go to some of my guests in studio for the moment, and thanks very much. And Laurel, you've got some more time to stay with us for a bit?
Yes.
Okay, I'll keep you with us in the conversation as much as I can. Lisa, let me maybe start out with you. Among other things, can you explain what LINC is and what its tie to working on the homeless issue is in North County?
Well, the LINC is a family resource center, and we're based in Atascadero, right on 6500 Morrow Road, right next to McDonald's. It serves the entire community of Atascadero, but in addition to that, we also have a satellite office in Paso Robles, and we work directly with schools who hire us to bring family advocates to help families and children who are at risk, and that's how the LINC operates. Right now, the LINC is also tied to the homeless services issue because we serve as the entity that organizes the North County Homeless Services Coalition. So in July, I started working for the LINC, and this was one of my charges to bring this group together, which is multiple agencies, multiple individuals, private citizens who have concerns about how we function as community members to support the homeless services issues in the North County. When the opportunity came with the Armory being used as a possible warming center, it was announced by Assemblyman Asajian, it prompted me to bring it to the attention of the group as to what who is charged with this task. And it was an evolving discussion which helped us to arrive with a relationship with Tim Harness here today, and because Laurel Weir brought him to our attention and brought us to this discussion today on how we want to organize a warming center in Atascadero, and that's how we arrived at that place. So that is the LINC.
Okay. Well, Lisa did a very good job then of telling us why you're at the table, Tim, so give us some idea how this fits together with what you're doing and how you got involved in this.
Well, the warming center in the Atascadero area had been going on for a number of years, and primarily a effort made by the faith-based organizations in the community to offer up space and volunteers individually to help support that. Over the years, the building use changes and the volunteer ranks have shrunk. We've shrunk down to just a couple of churches this last year able to support that, and this year just one church was able to support that initially. So we come on board with Laurel and her team and met with a coalition and established an effort to bring this into an organized effort this year with a volunteer team, and the St. William's Catholic Church had stepped up too through the efforts and offer their space for the warming center?
I think a lot of our listeners would, of course, know what a warming center is, but mm-hmm. we may want to define it sure. a little better about exactly what it is and under what circumstances. There's kind of a trigger point at which they're open and available in some communities.
Mm-hmm. There is. And the three different terms you'll hear is a shelter, which El Camino Homeless Organization satisfies that as an overnight and a feeding center for the folks, and then services that are provided through that. You have a Prado Day Center that people will hear about, and the Prado Day Center provides day services for the individuals. Different from that, what we do is provide a temporary overnight shelter for the folks, and in our case, we're triggered by weather. So when the temperature is below 35 degrees or greater than a 50% chance of rain, then we'll activate the center with volunteers at St. William's in this case, and open the doors for the folks to come in overnight for a period of time. We're open from 8 in the evening until 6 in the morning, so the coldest and the oldest part of the evening to bring them indoors.
I guess one of the factors, that the fact that there is a need for a warming center would be an indication that those people who want shelter, that there's not adequate number of places for those who want shelter from the shelters we have. I think there's a perception that between, South County's efforts and Echo and Maxine Lewis in San Luis Obispo, that that anybody, and I hate to ever even remotely use the word anybody, that anybody who's looking for a bed for the night in a shelter is going to be able to find it. Obviously, those we have a couple of thousand homeless people in the county. They're not all in those environments. And Laurel, maybe this is for you. Do we have an invisible homeless population, and that invisible homeless population stays invisible till being out at night is just unbearable?
I don't know that I would call them invisible. I think a lot of folks are fairly visible until night. But certainly the cold weather will bring folks inside. And as you point out, we have the last point in time count, we counted a little over 1,500 homeless persons. And so we don't have enough shelter beds for everybody who is homeless, which is part of the reason why we are working to try to expand warming centers in different parts of the county so that we can try to at least have somewhere where people can go when it gets very cold or very wet. But yes, the weather sometimes will cause folks to come in when it's extremely cold or extremely wet.
How do we address families in this? Because some of the materials that were provided to me for this program, and that obviously as our my guests here, you've forwarded to me, were startling as far as the number of students, and which therefore means families, but in some cases also things like there are about 240. It's K-12 students who are still students, but they're that age group, but are unattached based on they're pretty much by themselves. How does that population get addressed? Because I think obviously the most vulnerable we have are either the elderly, the frail, or our youth. Even the elderly and the frail have their limited resources that are not adequate. But when we're dealing with children, who haven't had a long enough life experience and understanding of the world around them to be very effective, effective in a community that has no support for them. How do we address that particular population?
So with the unaccompanied minors, one thing to know is that a number of the we work very closely with the schools, and a number of the unaccompanied minors do what's called couch surfing, which is very unstable. stable, but they are often indoors. For others, one of the things that the department has looked at is whether or not we can try to, do they qualify to be pulled into foster care, for example, because they are minors. And one of the things we're doing right now is trying to have a dialogue with youth about that who are, at risk of homelessness, and talking to them about that with foster care, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be placed with a stranger. One of the things we're looking at is trying to, in some cases, the youth will temporarily be staying with the parents of one of their friends. And so looking at that situation and seeing if the youth would meet the definition of someone eligible for foster care, and if the youth were willing to go into it, and we can look at seeing it, whether or not the folks that they're staying with would be willing to be screened, and if we could get them approved as foster parents, essentially, for the youth. We also work with the youth to try to help them get CalFresh benefits, because sometimes folks will take youth in, but then feel like they can't afford to pay to feed them. And sometimes if you can help provide some kind of financial assistance, that might be an incentive for folks to take youth in. There is a need for other options, and we're exploring those right now, such as a host homes model. We've been seeking a grant to try to create such a host homes model. And we're actively looking to see if there are other opportunities to try to serve this population.
Okay. Laurel, thanks very much. I want to bring Jim into the conversation too. You're the president of ECHO in Atascadero. For a lot of our listeners, what ECHO is as an organization may not be real clear, so why don't we start with that?
Okay. thank you, Fred. ECHO is celebrating its 15th year, and we do provide a meal program as well as overnight shelter. We were able to purchase our facility almost 4 years ago now, and remodel and increase our capacity from 30 beds to 50 beds, and increase our family accommodations from one room to four family rooms, many of which can accommodate multiple families. And currently we have nine families, 16 parents with 18 children at the shelter. And we do screen our residents very carefully. We ask them to work with our case managers for up to 90 days, and our goal at ECHO is to put our families and individuals into permanent housing. We are successful in doing that by having our families and individuals work with case managers who put a program together for them and help identify the challenges that have caused those individuals and families to be homeless and address those issues. We have employment training. We connect them with the various services that are available. And that's one of the things that having the coalition that Lisa spoke about convened periodically, so everyone is aware of what services are available to the homeless population in the North County. But we're working very hard with our families. We're essentially at capacity now. And that's one of the issues, really, that you alluded to earlier, and that is there simply aren't enough beds in the county to address all the needs of the homelessness, and that's why it's important to have programs like the warming shelters throughout the county that will accommodate people during inclement weather, because there are still a lot of people on the street that need protection.
Okay. Laurel, I want to come back to you for 1 minute, because I know you've got to go pretty soon. The new Prado Center, when that is finished, how many overnight beds will there be there?
It's my understanding that there'll be 100 overnight beds at the New Corrado Center.
And how many do we have at Maxine Lewis in San Luis Obispo now?
Maxine Lewis is around 50 or so.
Okay. Alrighty. So, obviously, that's a focus in the central part of San Luis County. It's not going to solve everything, but it's going to make a difference. Those kind of numbers were important for me to at least put on the table because I think it's a factor we need to pay attention to. There is my understanding, and as I've talked to other folks and talked to other members of the media, there is this perception for a lot of people that. That the homeless population that we see on the streets, in parks, that we see in downtown and Mission Plaza sometimes, that's necessarily a representation of the homeless community. I can tell you, having been an overnight custodian, for lack of a better way of putting it, at Echo before, those are not the people we necessarily see in shelters. Have we found a way to address the public perception of what homelessness is versus the reality of what homelessness is for a lot of our population?
Well, we do try to educate folks about that there really are a number of different subpopulations, that homelessness is not monolithic. We have everything from veterans to children to seniors. In some cases, very elderly seniors. So it burns quite the gamut. And we do try to, Homeless Services Oversight Council and all the agencies involved, we try to help educate folks about all the different types of people who are out on the street.
Okay. Thanks for your input, and thanks for being part of the program with us. I realize you're on the road this week, and I'm glad that you could fit it in. I want to remind our listeners that we're talking about homeless issues focused on the North County and the climate in the North County, if you will, that affects the homelessness, or not doesn't affect homelessness, but affects places for the homeless to stay during the wintertime. So we're talking about warming centers also. If you want to be part of this discussion, the phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. We would like you to be part of this discussion if you choose. And I want to basically make sure that our guests have an opportunity to answer any questions that you may have. I encourage you to call in the earlier part of the program. By doing that, we'll get a chance to have time for that. Jim, I alluded to it from my experience at Echo. And I have to confess, it's been a couple of years. I've not overnighted there since the new facility's all finished.
I have to give you a call.
But I know. Yeah, you have to give me a call. I understand that. I no argument with that. It was striking that there were a number of families there. There were a number of families with small children, and one of the things that made that most distressing to see was that adults during a time of homelessness in their life often have the skills to persevere. The kids don't have the skills to persevere. How do you look at that?
Well, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that we do at Echo is, as I mentioned earlier, we bring individuals and families into the shelter with a commitment to work towards whatever their issues are that cause them to be homeless and make a commitment to address those issues. And so during that 90 days that they're at Echo, and if we have space and they're making progress, we don't evict them after 90 days. Our goal is to get them permanently housed. And if you tour Echo, you will see that we try to make the families and individuals and the children feel like that's home. You know, our facilities are very home-like. They have furniture in their rooms, and we also have programs for the the children. We have volunteers from Cal Poly and others come in and do tutoring, and there are a number of activities for children, so they actually feel like that is home for 90 days, and it is challenging for them. We're grateful to the various school districts. We have children that come from Paso Robles, Templeton, as well as Atascadero. The school districts are very good about helping us get those children to their respective schools, and we try to normalize life as much as we can for the children, but it can be traumatic.
I'm going to try and get through this story without getting upset about it, because it bothers me every time I talk about it. Last time I was at Echo, there was a family whose child went to school in Paso Robles, and we were talking to them about, wasn't it more convenient for their children to go in Atascadero? And the view was, we want our children to not be around the kids they see every day as homeless people in their school environment. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that's not a one-off issue.
No, it is something that we do as much as we can at Echo to prevent that kind of interaction. We don't want to identify individuals as being homeless. And in fact, and you're well aware of how we operate the program at Echo with volunteers, including organizations and groups in the community that provide the meal service. We don't let school-age children volunteer because we don't want them to see people in the shelter who maybe on the school grounds with them.
Mm-hmm. It's a real problem, and that's a segment of the population that doesn't have the coping skills. I'm not suggesting that anybody who's homeless just bucks up and has all the coping skills they need to get through this. Obviously, they don't. But when there's kids involved in it, it becomes very, very difficult to address. We do have a call. Let me go ahead. Jamie, are you there? Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, no problem.
You're in the discussion. You're on the air.
Okay. I am a mother from Atascadero with young children, and so the topic of homelessness is kind of a balance for me, as I have a heart for these people that I want to see thriving, and that especially the children. But as you kind of touched on with the different subsets of the homelessness, I often, am at the parks and at the different places where there's this group of homeless, population that is frustrating as a mother to see. It makes us feel unsafe at times. And I guess I would just be curious of what some feedback to me is there, adequate things being done for those sort of situations, or some recommendations for me as a, like I said, a mother of young children. How do I support this community as well as, not feel frustrated by how many there are and often places that make me feel a little bit unsafe with my children?
Tim, you shook your head. Can you jump into that?
I think that strikes a nerve with most everybody, that there isn't enough support in our North County. As Prado in the South County would provide some day service for folks, a place where they can go to seek resources, to seek job training, to seek the counseling, to seek the support with showers, with laundry facilities. And it doesn't take much, but we have nothing now. What we have is Echo, which provides a valuable service to 50 people. And then we have the overnight warming center, which provides the emergency shelter, if you will, during those inclement periods. But there is nothing during the day for the folks to go to. And so they're going to gravitate toward the population centers, the business centers, where they can get support. They'll go to the library. They'll go to the...
Yeah. Jamie, thanks for your call. We're going to continue the discussion, but you bring up a very good point. I appreciate it. So continue to listen, please. As the link looking at this is, are there any resources that you're looking to try and cultivate, Lisa, that may better provide some day services for the North County?
Well, I think what we're talking about today is the approach that we share with all the organizations that support families. So the link has a significant role. Currently, we are serving families during the day, but we're not really set up to do the activities Tim just described, like showers, laundry facilities, et cetera. As director at the link, I do sign off with cash assistance, with community donations. These are from our community to help families with these kind of needs as they present themselves. And I'm doing it every day. And so families who are in ECHO or families who are not quite at ECHO but might be on that way are in our services. And not just in Atascadero. This is Templeton. This is San Miguel, Chandon, and Paso Robles. This is what
And Fred, if I may just add on to that, too. As I mentioned earlier, ECHO does provide meals to anyone who's hungry every day, 365 days a year. We do open our shower facility 3 days a week to, again, anyone that wants to come to the shelter in the afternoon when we open the campus. Currently, the conditions by which we're able to operate in the city of Atascadero, we are excluded from offering day services there. Our campus is closed during the day, and that was one of the agreements that was required of the city when we purchased the church, and it became our facility. We do counseling during the day with our clients, but yes, there absolutely is a need for more day services in the North County.
For people who may not know where the physical facility is, you actually sit right to, literally down the road 100 yards from the front of the high school and across the street from a private religious elementary school. So I think that it's understandable that there would be some concern that the city may have on what services are going on there around children and what the population is. So I think it's very lucky that the facility you have you were able to get. There's a long story there. We've actually talked about on the program before that that was a facility that used to be a church that you folks leased or rented from the church for a long time.
Yes, prior to purchasing it, we were there for 7 years, and so we've been there now, 11.
11 years. Okay, we have another call. Let me go ahead. Paul, thanks for waiting. Paul from Montecito, go ahead.
Oh, you're welcome. But there's so many things that come to mind when I hear the issue discussed, and obviously there are very delineated constraints, supply and demand, physical building to keep people, money to purchase resources, food, etc. And then on top of that, to find a staff that's nurturing and psychologically capable of understanding, primarily with empathy. But, this is such an all-encompassing issue. And I guess the first thing that comes to mind is I wonder how anyone would feel if they had nowhere to go, no friends to turn to, no money, and they had to find a place to sleep tonight. That's one issue, because I think it should be there should be no separation when it comes to the causality of trying to determine who gets, even the word warming center kind of triggers me, because I think, okay, it's like providing a Thanksgiving meal for people. Yes, it's better to provide that than nothing, but I'm thinking, where are we the rest of the year? And then, you have the multifaceted psychological traumas that these people have to be exposed to, whether they're a veteran with PTSD, whether they're a child that, has been hidden from their parents. It gets so complex. And then, you could go over to the other strata of society where there is the you and I who are employed. We have excellent insurance and so forth. It's difficult for us to find an appropriate type of psychological help in this day and age in our society in America when we really need help. And what I'll interject here is Robin Williams. You know, here was a multimillionaire that for whatever reason didn't get the help that he needed. So you have compounded with the actual situation that they are not able to find a way to support themselves or to survive. On top of that, you have to deal with the stigma and being subjected to the type of individual you're forced to deal with. For instance, and I understand I'm not making any accusations. What I'm saying is that it's difficult to find certain people when the wages aren't there. And then I guess what I think about is if the tables were turned tomorrow and we had nowhere to go, how would we deal with this? And you know, it's kind of like years ago, if somebody got a flat tire, somebody alongside the road, somebody stop them, help them. And now because of technology and the tires, rarely if ever do people get a flat tire. So you don't see people on the side of the road. But where I'm going with this is for these people that have nowhere to go, have nothing to eat, yeah, they can get something. But, you know, I remember reading recently about a woman who took it upon herself to create a shower system. I think it was with trucks or buses up north, possibly in the Oakland area, where she now has a grant where she can help people take a shower. And then the minimal people interaction, you know, it's like I consider myself a very gregarious person, but especially at this time of year, I notice a lot of callousness. And so that's one thing, you know, just that. But then I guess what I would ask your people that are involved in this program that you're having today, which I really appreciate, thank you, is to ask themselves when it comes to children, why is there no methodology to try to determine? There's a segment of children that have been hidden from their parents, one of the parents. And so when they go to school, people not only do not ask them questions about their parents, these children grow up with a psychological trauma that's called parental alienation. And that's something I think that begs examination, because when we look at one another, instead of casting judgment, I look at it very simply. Those people could be us in a heartbeat. And a lot of people, of course, practice denial. But I think the only way we're going to move forward is to come to the table together. And it's rather sort of disheartening to hear that a lot of churches have discontinued this. But I think it comes in the day-to-day of how we treat one another. And are we there for each other when a terrible situation comes across our road of life?
Yeah. Paul, I think, this is Fred, I think to some extent you may have done the best thing you can possibly do by just asking the questions. Because I think what you do is you provoke people to think about whether or not there's anything, how small, how large, how significant, how marginally significant they might be able to do something to make a difference. And I think that's my perception as the host of this show now for 3 years is that a lot of what we do is just help make people aware of the fact that we are in this together.
Right.
And that seems to make a difference. There were the Prado Road Center that they did a groundbreaking on last month. There were probably 400 people there, community members and donors and people involved in the project, just for the groundbreaking, which basically took place on a work day in the middle of the day. And I believe the energy that left that area when that happened became a good positive influence. So I think I would suggest to you that we can't solve it all. But as long as we continue talking about it, we'll do a better job than if we just silently look back or look aside. And you did make a good point, which is people have to pay attention. I thank you for the call.
Yeah, and Fred, if I may comment
I also
too.
I think if we would try to actually put ourselves in that position, I don't know if you heard about the experiment someone did some time back. I think it was an employer, a boss of a company, dressed himself up as a homeless person and stood near their workplace and watched the people they worked with come by when they kind of begged for food. And I think that's interesting. Not that in and of itself it accomplishes anything, but I think our desensitivity, it's increasing. And you know, arguably, when we're not feeling, yes, it might be psychological survival, but again, I know for a fact that there are thousands of children across the United States that are, have been hidden from a parent, so that's something that needs to be somehow, somebody find a way to look into.
Yeah.
You take care.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for calling. Jim, you started jumping with us.
Thank you, Fred. I wanted to follow up with your comment regarding the caller's observation that, you know, we need to do something about this issue. We are doing something about it. There's a lot more to do, obviously. And the comment that we are all in this together if we're going to solve this problem. And I just want to emphasize the fact that, you know, in the 15 years that ECHO has been in operation, we have grown significantly from just a meal program to an overnight shelter. And what makes our model unique and successful is the engagement of the community, the recognition in the community that this is an issue, it's a community-wide issue, and we all need to pitch in to help address it. And ECHO has over 1,000 volunteers during the year that help make our programs work. The meals are provided by volunteer groups and organizations, and then much of our staffing overnight, as you pointed out, you participated in the past, is done by volunteers. We're expanding our staff so we can have greater success with our counseling and our aid to individuals and families finding a permanent place to live and addressing the issues that brought them into homelessness in the first place.
Very good point, Jim. Thanks. Tim, as the caller was talking and as Jim was responding, something occurred to me that the warming centers, when you're able to do it, there's an on and off switch here. If it's not raining, it may not be open. If it's not below a certain temperature, it may not be open. And I'll give you, I can't pin this to a certain span of dates, but I suspect it happens, and that is it's 22 degrees in Atascadero for a week of a span somewhere. And as the temperature goes back up, at some point, those of you who are responsible for keeping the warming centers available has to say, based upon the guidelines we have and the agreements we have with the churches that are doing this, it's now getting too warm to continue to open the center. It must be a tough thing to have to say to people.
It's heart-wrenching for me, and I'll start with a story there. This last Sunday, we're out at the park at Sunken Gardens at 6:15 in the morning. We take coffee and burritos out to the homeless. And these guys are coming up out of the creek or waiting there for us in the morning. And this guy walks up with two plastic bags, one on each foot, to keep his feet warm. Has these real thin shoes on, and he's just shaking. The next guy comes up, he's got frost-covered coat, had been sleeping, and the moisture on his coat froze, and he got up and walked over there and just shaking. He's shivering to keep warm. So it's tough. It comes back to having a place to host the warming center, and we can't open every day of the week because you don't have a facility that has just carte blanche. They have activities that go on to the churches, things this time of year that they have to attend to. And so we are most thankful to have the days that we do. But the call has to be made. And if we set our parameters at 35 degrees, do you open at 36 degrees? If it's 35 degrees the last hour of the night, is that the call to open because it was 37, 38 all night long? It's a tough call that I have to make in there. But the other issue is the volunteer pool. We compete with a lot of other organizations, a lot of other charitable events that happen this time of year, family issues and things that go on. And so our volunteer pool right now is small. We got a real hard January coming up. Predicted 21 days of rain and cold weather. And I just want to save that volunteer pool for that big push and not burn them out on a day here, a day there. We're going to do as much as we can, but understand that our pool is small.
Yeah. Lisa, there's part of your program that's related to trying to find permanent housing. How's that process work? And I guess, can you give us a timeline of when a candidate for permanent housing shows up and how you work through helping them get the resources, finding housing? I'll interject before you answer that question that I've been reminded by the people involved in the Housing Trust and other housing programs in San Luis County that if we could house all of the homeless tomorrow because we had the money, there isn't enough rental property available to put them in. I've been reminded that there are at least 2,200 individuals or couples or families that would need housing. And on average, there's only about 1,100 to 1,200 empty rental units on any given month in San Luis County. So even if all the money was there, there's no housing right now for them. But how does that process evolve for someone to get from homeless to housed to the additional resources to become self-sufficient?
It is a process, and it's a process that the Link shares with our partners at the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, as well as all the agencies in this county that share these responsibilities. In the North County, we employ a case manager that her job is to prevent homelessness. So when it comes to our attention that for whatever their circumstances, someone's lost their job, they're behind in their rent, they're about to be evicted, there is a process, and it's called the Emergency Support
Solutions.
Emergency Solutions Grant, thank you, Jim, that helps people to keep them in their homes. And I signed off on one today before I came down here, and the idea is that we want to prevent you from being homeless, and we're going to do our part with these multiple options that we have available through different agencies. But where the Link comes in is that we are employing someone to help do that. The other part is when someone is brought to our attention, and this is not unique to the North County, but it is a countywide issue, is that there just isn't enough housing. We're very fortunate that the two people we employ to do this work really establish an excellent relationship with landlords. And those landlords are wonderful partners in this process. They're very understanding. At the same time, they need to be receive their funds to be able to house people. So part of that is working with that family, identifying where their strengths are, because everybody comes to the table with strengths. And sometimes it's an opportunity to just recognize those strengths and get settled, understand your budget, understand where it is that you can we can help. And that's what the case manager will do. And everybody's story is unique, but I will say that it's families. It's families with children. That's who we're working with. And I know folks are very concerned about that issue because I know we do have great programs available for the adults, like the 50 Now program at Transitions Mental Health. I know our veterans programs are in place. But I think our biggest challenge before us is how do we work together through supporting families to stay where they are and also finding that place. So, yes, not enough affordable housing, not enough apartments. And I don't know how to – it's not going to happen overnight. I would like to just acknowledge St. Williams before the program ends about how they stepped up to the plate. Father Edwin and Deacon Rick were two of the individuals we worked with on this, and they see this as their mission to partner with us on that, and it's with them that's making this possible, and we're so grateful to them, especially at this time of the year when they're very busy over there with their holiday festivities.
Yeah. This may be a question there's not an answer for, but it's a question that comes to mind and I've not had a chance to ask on our program before. How did we address this 25 years ago? Because we can talk about what's happened to the economy. We can talk about the evolution of the closing of hospitals and mental health agencies and organizations over decades. I'll stay out of the politics of that, even though I'd prefer not to. But I mean, there's this view, I think, for a lot of people that somehow homelessness started 20 years ago. Yeah. I don't think that's the case, obviously. I know it's not the case, but are any organizations like any of yours looking at the evolution of how we, I mean, if I can see how I got the, if I can see how the road got me into a valley, maybe I can pay attention to the road, to whether or not that same road can get me out of a valley. And I don't know if that's something we can address.
Yeah, I think that's a real challenge, Fred. You know, as Lisa pointed out, the single largest cause of homelessness in San Luis Obispo County anyway is the lack of affordable housing for very low-income individuals and families. It's just not there. So that alone is going to put people on the streets. Mm-hmm. And 25 years ago, Maxine Lewis was operating back then, I think, as you know. So that's an indication that, yes, there was homelessness and it was being recognized. I think what's happened here is simply the cost of living in San Luis Obispo County. It's exacerbated the problem mm-hmm. significantly. Also, there's been a greater awareness, I think, brought to the public forum about the seriousness of homelessness, and there is more effort being put forth to address the issues. You hit on one, and that was the closure of mental hospitals and mm-hmm. the lack of services, walk-in services. I am from Atascadero, as you are, and yeah. I can remember when Atascadero State Hospital would take self-admission from mm-hmm. people on the street who could check in and check out and have those services. Well, those don't exist anymore. And so, you know, we need to address the causes of homelessness, the fact that many homeless individuals do have addiction issues, they have mental health issues, and those are the things that need to be addressed. And it's been found that it's better, easier, and more successful to address those issues when people are housed. They're more stable and better able to focus on the problems that brought them to homelessness in the first place. And you hear nationally now of a housing first model. Let's get people housed and stable, and then we'll address the issues that brought them into homelessness. And that's a huge challenge in San Luis Obispo, because even people of higher means can't find housing. Yeah,
that's a very good point. Tim, we're down to the last few minutes. What do you want to make sure people leave listening to this program with with an understanding of and what you're doing?
I think one topic that's been threaded through the discussion in the last few minutes has been the point of the demographics, that homelessness is not just one stereotypical type of people out there. The demographics has a lot to do with how we address the needs out there. And each one of us could explain the demographics based on what we do with a homeless shelter, with a link, and just the temporary relief that we provide out there. The organizations that we are sponsoring that provide the temporary relief rely on volunteer support, and it's easy for someone to open their wallet and donate. It's very difficult for someone to step up and donate 6 hours or 12 hours of time, but it's needed. And this is, it's not a Band-Aid, but it's a cause that helps people to survive out on the street. In time, we'll have larger shelters in our North County, but we don't have them now, and we need to provide that relief now. It takes volunteer support to do that.
I'll interject into that I think sometimes we don't remind people adequately that if they can't write a check, maybe they can find 6 hours.
They are. And people are, just in short, some of the folks we talk to are afraid of the population. We provide training for our volunteers before they step foot into the shelter to help help them to feel more comfortable about their experience there, and it works very well.
Mm-hmm. And Tim, could you speak about the training, too? Because I know you have some training sessions scheduled.
We do. We're doing training every Saturday from 9:30 until noon. We're using the link over on 6500 Morrow Road in Atascadero, right next to the McDonald's. Provide a 2.5-hour training, and we just open the table up. We'll share what our operational goals are, what our policy and procedures are, and then a bit about dealing with behaviors and the emergencies that might take place there. And it
helps. Can people find you? Can they contact you through the link, or what's the best way to get you?
Yes, they can contact us through the link. It's our best resource to get a hold of us.
Harney, Lisa, it's up to you.
Well, I'll tell you, I also want to highlight that dialing 211 will give you information about the status of the warming center, and it will take you to a phone number that will at least capture your request. The link will be closed over the holidays. But either place, we will take the calls and respond to them as quickly. I think this is what we're trying to organize our whole effort here, and this is a multi-agency approach. And I'm very, very encouraged by the people who are joining us to do this. And this is just the beginning. It's not just something we're going to shut the doors in March and just say, see you later next year. We're going to continue this approach and conversation in the coming days.
Yeah, you brought up a very good point, because you said, and I'm sorry we didn't mention it earlier, that 211 is a good link to the link and a good link to everything else. That's the new version of what we thought about for years. We called Hotline, correct, among other things, and that's all tied together. If they don't know where to find it, it probably doesn't exist to be found, or some organization is hiding. So I think that's very good for you to bring that up, and I thank you all. It's a question we're not going to get answered quickly. It goes back to, as you've all said, housing, and when housing isn't affordable, people can't afford to find a place to get a shelter over their head. And I thank you all for being part of the program and being part of this discussion. I'll remind you all that that you can find the link through 211, as Lisa said. ECHO is the El Camino homeless organization in Atascadero, and if you Google any of these, you'll certainly find them. And if you can't find them, you're welcome to call KCBX, or I'll also in just a moment give you a phone number for Central Coast Voices. So I'll kind of start backwards, I guess. You can call Central Coast Voices at Action for Healthy Communities, which is 543-2323. That's the best link that I'm going to be able to give you at the moment right now, but also calling 211 would be great. As you know, Central Coast Voices is a production for Action for Healthy Communities, which is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. I want to thank you for being part of our program today. Remind you that we will be on hiatus next week in our place. Next Thursday will be a special report from Capital Public Radio out of Sacramento. It'll be the California Dream Undocumented. More than 3 million unauthorized immigrants live in California, and there'll be a one-hour documentary talking about these people with some very, very good understanding in case studies, college students, families, graduate students, people who are addressing that issue in California specifically, and that's available. We'll be back with you after the start of the new year. Chris Kington will be back. I'll be back. We thank you for being part of this process. I thank my guests today, Tim Harness, Lisa Frazier, Jim Patterson, and Laura Weir on the phone. It's an important time of year. Do something.